If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Nebraska basketball stock soars even in defeat, and Nebraska football has a roadmap for 2026. This is the Pick Six Podcast. Hey, everybody. Evan Blaine here with Sam McEwen from the Omaha World Herald. And gall darn, Sam, this is a newsier time of year than maybe Nebraska fans are used to, where you've got high NCAA tournament seedings going on in basketball. You've got a little football talk at kind of a time of year when maybe that doesn't come up a bunch. But exciting times, yes. Like, this is, it feels like a little bit more of an energized late January than is typical around here.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Nebraska basketball did lose, but it was an exciting loss, if that makes sense. They stayed competitive with a team that I think is good, and they did it on the road in a relatively difficult environment. I don't know that it was frothy. I don't know if it was PBA frothy up there. We'll have to ask Wilson Moore when he gets back, but it wasn't easy. And Nebraska played without two of its, seven best players. And Braden Frager, who is nursing an ankle injury, and I think may be back Sunday against Illinois. And Rink Mast, who had the flu so bad he couldn't keep down fluids and basically sat in the locker room, I think, for the game. I know that the Peacock broadcast designated Leo Curtis as Rink Mast.
Right.
That did not happen. The Peacock broadcast reminded me of my childhood when these really big sporting events would show up on like Sports Vision or some sort of, direct to video event, or you know what I'm talking, like pay-per-view, but back then it was called something different. Or when you used to call, one time when I was a little kid and I really wanted to watch WrestleMania or Royal Rumble, I can't remember which one it was, I called a pay number. You like dial it on the rotary phone, and I was like listening to the Royal Rumble on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom came upstairs and she's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm listening to the WWF WrestleMania on the phone. That was the quality of the audio last night from Peacock. It sounded like we were listening through a glass bottle. It was the strangest broadcast ever for a top five game. Or at least today. Back then, I think it was pretty common, whether it was on Ms. Lou or, the fourth team on whatever, Jefferson Pilot. That's what this felt like. And the announcers were not the best. I'm not going to knock them, but like just the overall broadcast quality and the producers on hand, they didn't appear to know anything about Nebraska. They knew a little bit about Michigan. So like the broadcast was almost surreal. The game was a little surreal because you're like, how is Nebraska going to compete in this game? And then they competed for 40 minutes and quite frankly had every chance to win the game. And they just fell short.
So it's interesting, like the vibes in that, Sam, because what we're used to doing with football is when Nebraska plays somebody close, and they do every year, and they fall short, and there's sort of a, well, they almost got it, and there's the whole moral victory talk. This didn't feel like that. This felt like a team that had every reason to not be competitive, being shorthanded, being on the road, all the things, and they lead for most of the game. And if it weren't for a few swing calls late, including a charge that should have been called with Sam Hoiberg absorbing it late in the final minute, and a couple other things, a free throw disparity, and Nebraska very well could have won that game. Like, do you come away from that? Nebraska's first loss since last, March?
Yeah.
Do you come away from that feeling better about what the Huskers can do here down the stretch in the Big Ten race and in the NCAA tournament?
I think I feel a little bit better, Evan, because I felt like at the beginning of the game, they had a lineup out there that they might be able to use at some point in the NCAA tournament if Mast gets in foul trouble. Kind of a small ball lineup, and then Burke Buchtenjell in there too. And it felt like it got Michigan a little bit off balance. And even though obviously over the course of the game they missed Rink Mast over the course of 40 minutes, but I thought in the first 5 minutes Michigan was actually struggling to keep up with what Nebraska was doing. DeMarcus Lawrence got a lot of open shots. I mean, he wasn't hitting, joke shots. They were open. And then Price Sanford toward the end of the half got open shots. And so I felt like the lineup they were using had some effectiveness to it. Now all those guys got worn out. That goes without saying. When you get into those 30-minute stretches and then you're playing, your second road game in 3 or 4 days, you do run out of gas. And I thought some of the shots late were a little short. I thought Samford's shot out at the top of the key, which, was, you knew he was going to shoot it, probably wasn't his best shot of the night. He didn't make it. And then, they missed a couple late that weren't bad looks. And I thought Jamarcus Lawrence actually was going to nail that three, and it just didn't go in. So yeah, they ran out of gas. I think that there's a positive in that lineup. I'm on the Fred Hoiberg. There's no real moral victory in the sense that, like, yeah, you fought hard and good for you. But like that doesn't get credited to the next game. And so like Nebraska will have to play just as hard against Illinois, irrespective of what they did against Michigan. And so like I don't know that there's anything you can take in that regard, but I think you can look at, okay, when Nebraska plays a team that's this large again, here are some of the things that they know they can do. And here are some of the ways they can slow down that team. And they really slowed Michigan down in the second half. Those are the things that I take away from it. I don't think anything's going to be easy from here on out, though. Illinois on Sunday, Rutgers took Michigan State to the wire in whatever they call that gym. Rutgers is not a good team, but they're not just going to lay down. Then you get Purdue. Then you get two against Iowa, and Iowa's a pain in the butt. They're a good program, and he's a good coach, and they're not going to be easy to play. So Iowa's not just going to lay down for you. Then you got that West Coast swing, and that's not going to be a joke. And I've said that from the very beginning of this season, Evan. I'd be really surprised if they go out there and finish 2-0. I really would. I thought the UCLA game or the USC game, they're going to drop one of those two because that LA trip is not easy for anybody that goes out there. Ask Purdue. They went out there. Didn't go well. Like that stuff happens. So this is a no. There's not much time, and I think Fred will give them probably. He probably gave them the evening, the night, to appreciate their fight. But then it's like, okay, we got to get Mass back healthy. Where's Frager at? All hands on deck for Illinois, which, in my opinion, having watched Illinois and Michigan quite a bit this season, I think Illinois is probably just as good and maybe a better basketball team than Michigan. Nebraska just happened to beat Illinois because it played a little bit better and it had two extra players for that game. But I think Illinois is really good. And so what's going to happen Sunday is Nebraska is going to be challenged all over again in all the same ways it was challenged at Illinois, last month. It's not going to be easy. And so, like, Nebraska can't spend a lot of time patting itself on the back for the effort. They have to move the they have to turn the page real quick to the next one because they could lose to Illinois. Like, Illinois is really good, and they'll go out and beat Rutgers, but they could lose to Purdue. Purdue's not as good as Illinois, but Purdue's not bad, and they have a great point guard. So, like, you can't take your foot off the gas pedal at this point.
Yeah, I thought it validated the system. Like this was to me, this game, even though Nebraska didn't win, was a system game and a coach game. Like you think about in past years, if Nebraska's best player or one of their top two players was out on the road, they're not going to be competitive in a situation like that. And so you still saw the same movement on offense, the screens, the backdoor cuts, the versatility of scoring. That you would have otherwise. I thought the adjustments that they made defensively as the game went along with Michigan were solid. Nate Linzer doing his thing on that side of the ball, and it felt like it's a team where the sum of its parts are not as good as the whole. And I don't know if I'm that team, like I'm taking a lot of confidence out of what they did in that game. And you're right. Like now you gotta bring it at PBA on Sunday afternoon, and that place is going to be a cracker box. I mean, it's going to be a ton of fun. And I mean, the Big Ten race is right there too, right, Sam? I mean,
The
Nebraska's one
14
loss
race.
there. Yeah, Purdue, Illinois, these are huge games. You're not just looking at national top 25 rankings. You're looking at Big Ten tournament seeding. You want that triple bye now. I think it's right. It's a triple bye in the Big Ten tournament. And then obviously whatever kind of top seed you can get for the NCAAs. But if Rick Mast is back and Braden Frager can give it a go on Sunday, like it does feel like this is a team that can make a run. Like, are you as weird as the conversation is at this point? Like, are you in the camp that's like, yeah, Nebraska could make a run to the Sweet 16 or deeper and be a contender in ways that people just have never really seen with this program?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. And it's not about the statement I've always made, Evan, related to the NCAA tournament thing is if you get a high enough seed, you're going to play a team you can beat. And in Nebraska, yes, they lost to Xavier back in 1991, and I remember the game well. It was late at night. Xavier wasn't a number 14 seed. They weren't. And back then, the way that seedings happened probably wasn't the way it's supposed to be. But Xavier hit a lot of shots, and Nebraska lost and missed a ton of free throws, so on and so forth. A lot of that stuff won't happen today. So if you get a three seed, you're going to probably win, especially if you're locked in like Nebraska will be. Once you get the first win, I think you can do a lot. You can go a long way. So absolutely. I think some of it's matchups, some of it is. You got to hit shots on the right day. You got to be in a gym that feels comfortable to you. So, there's been a lot of two seeds over the years that didn't make it out of the first weekend. Doesn't mean that Nebraska didn't have a good season. So, yeah, I do. I think they can make a run to the Sweet 16. I think they can make a run to the Final Four. There's nothing that stops them from doing that. I think I would say that we're going to learn a lot more about this team over February because of the schedule, and because now it's not just playing in a vacuum of like you're kind of be watching the schedule a little bit, and you're also going to be watching those standings, and you're going to see the desire to win a Big Ten title kick in. It's going to kick in now, and it probably already has, but like it's really going to kick in. And Illinois is going to beat Washington, which means it's going to be a four-way tie at the top of the Big Ten. Michigan State's going to play Michigan and Nebraska's going to play Illinois, right? This weekend. So
Very
then,
clean, yes.
yeah. So then you're going to have two teams at 10 and 1. You're going to have two teams at 9 and 2. And then, I think all those games are over, but it's going to be a race and it's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, I have no qualms of that. The other thing I did, and one of the reasons that I can answer that question a little bit differently is because over the last 48 hours, I watched all five of the top five teams in the country. Two of them played each other, obviously, in Nebraska and in Michigan. Duke played Louisville on Monday as part of the first part of a doubleheader on ESPN. And then Arizona played at BYU as the second part of the doubleheader. So Arizona's number one. Duke is four, and Connecticut played last night against Providence, and they're two. So I got to watch all five teams, and I had to DVR the Connecticut game a little bit because I had to go back and watch it because some of it overlapped with the Nebraska-Michigan game. But I was pretty much able to watch the full Duke game and then the full Arizona game, which was a wild roller coaster ride. And I think Nebraska can compete with all those teams. I think Arizona is the team that's sort of streaky and, the team that you're like, that team could win the national championship. That team could lose to an eight seed. And you could envision both things happening. That team is huge, just like Michigan. So their best player, in my opinion, is, and you'll remember this last name, Coa Pete.
Yeah.
Remember Todd Pete? You probably don't. You were still in Council Bluffs when Todd Pete was at Nebraska.
I remember Todd Pete.
Yeah.
They had
And then his
internet and
brother,
TV
Andrews
available.
Pete, was down at Stanford in Nebraska, where he was going to go to college and obviously went to Stanford.
Oh, yeah.
But Koa is, I think, the youngest of those Petes, and he's going to be a lottery pick. And he's really good. They have giants. I mean, they're just a giant team. So they're very similar to Michigan. Probably not quite as old as Michigan. They're younger in some spots. Very talented. Their two best players are freshmen. Pete's the best of them, and they're kind of streaky. Like they're up and down. and they got a giant lead on BYU and then almost caught the whole thing up. And BYU is another team that's a competitor for a national championship. Nebraska knows all about them. They played them in an exhibition. And then I watched, but the first game of the night was Duke, and Duke is kind of awkward on offense. They don't really have what you call like a really smooth guard, in my opinion. They're kind of awkward, and they're really, 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 really good on defense. Like unbelievable on defense. And everybody knows that their best player is Cam Boozer, and he's really, really, really good. And probably the National Player of the Year, I think. I think he'll probably win that award. I'm kind of going through my brain in this moment trying to think of who else it would be. And I guess it won't be the guy at Kansas because he hasn't played enough games, even if he's the number one pick in the NBA draft. It's probably going to be DeBansa, or it's going to be Cameron Boozer. It's probably going to be Cam Boozer. They're not as big. So Boozer's 6'9", but like they have a ton of freshmen. But they're not totally young. But I think Nebraska would struggle to play them. I think Nebraska would struggle to score against Duke because Duke has a variety of like sizes and speeds and athleticism. I think they're more athletic than Michigan based on what I've seen. I think Nebraska could beat Arizona on the given day, but Arizona is also real streaky. I think they can beat Michigan. And then there's UConn, and UConn just wins games. They don't win pretty. I mean, they barely beat Villanova. They really didn't play well against Providence last night. And it's not going to surprise me one bit if they lose to a very mediocre Creighton team on Saturday night, because Creighton will be juiced up and Creighton will put everything into that game and Creighton will play well. It will not surprise me if UConn loses that game. UConn is, I think Nebraska can beat UConn too, but UConn's got athletes and some experience, some guys that have been around, guys that have won national championships. So they still got a couple of those guys there. So I think Nebraska's competitive with all those teams. The other thing I thought, Evan, as I watched all five of these teams, is I'm not sure that the national champion is in those five.
More of a deeper field,
Yeah, I think,
not so top heavy.
Houston's right there.
Yeah.
So that's one of the teams that I'm thinking about. I think Illinois is actually a damn good basketball team.
Agreed.
And they're, I think, nine. I don't know if Michigan State, I don't know that I would put them in that group, but like they probably played Nebraska as well as anybody at PBA. Nobody's really hung with Nebraska at PBA except Michigan State. I cannot bring myself to believe that Iowa State's going to win the national championship. I just can't. No offense to Iowa State. And then there's Gonzaga, which lost by 40 to Michigan, but probably is a better, much better team than that across the rest of their resume. I don't think Gonzaga is going to win the national title either, but so I don't know. Part of me says Houston. Part of me says Texas Tech, which has gotten hot. Part of me says that Kansas, now that this guy's playing, and if people know who I'm talking about, he hasn't played a lot of this season. He's like going to be the first pick in the. And he hasn't played a ton. Darren Peterson is his name. He's only played 10 games, but he's great. You know what I mean? Like, he's really good. He's going to be a great pro. But he's been hurt a lot. It's hard to say what's going on there. If he plays and they let him just be the guy, then I think Kansas actually can make a run at this thing. And I don't know how. There's a lot of Jayskers in this state too. Jayskers of a different kind.
That's true.
Who root for
Yes.
Kansas. They're usually like west of Lincoln, and it's like south of Lincoln, but like there are people who root for Kansas basketball and Nebraska football. They fell in love with KU back in the whatever days, the 90s, when Jacques Vaughn was there, or Ralph LaFrance or Kirk Heinrich, but Kansas could do it. So like I think it's a wide open field, and I think Nebraska's a part of it. There's no reason why Nebraska can't make a run. At the same time, Nebraska can't expect anything outside of if they get a 2 or 3 seed, Evan, they're going to win their first game. They're going to win the NCAA tournament game that they haven't ever won. And then after that, it's game on. Like everybody that's in the top 20 right now, I think can beat anybody. It's It just doesn't feel like it's a year where like a team is running out front the way that
Yeah.
UConn did a couple of years ago. It feels more like last year when, and you could go ask 50 people who won the NCAA championship last year, and I'm not sure 30 people could tell you it was Florida.
Right.
I'm not sure, because most of what people remember from last year is Cooper Flagg, and Houston beat Cooper Flagg, and yeah, I don't know who Houston lost to. Like, Florida won the national title last year. It was the most one of the most nondescript national titles ever after Houston beat Duke. So it's going to be like that. I think you're not necessarily going to know who that team is until they get hot in the tournament. There's no prohibitive favorite.
Last thing on this, and I agree with what you're saying. Can we just again take a moment to realize like how quickly things escalated with Nebraska basketball? Like the narrative forever is win an NCAA tournament game. And here we are having this discussion in late January about how high the seed is and how deep they can go. It's just amazing. It hasn't, the novelty hasn't worn off on me. Maybe it has on you because that's some good, like in the moment analysis. But I'm still sort of like, is this real? Like, is Nebraska basketball, like that top five, are they really in the same breath with Arizona, UConn, Michigan, Duke, like the blue bloods of the sport? And here they are. Like, I agree. I like they have all the makings objectively of a team that could make a run. But it's hard to think of a lot of examples in honestly in sports or in life where you've had one goal for so long, this one thing where the bar is not that high, and then immediate and then suddenly out of nowhere, you clear that expectation and go on to these other conversations that are so much more. The Indiana football comparison is apt, certainly, but it continues to amaze me because of what the conversation has been around this program for so long that here they are. Having a chance to do something pretty special.
That's a great point. You know who I need to talk to? Because I think there's somebody who does understand what that's like is Connie Yori. Because Nebraska had won NCAA tournament games, mind you, when they went 32-2 or whatever. But Nebraska was not like this juggernaut of a program when they went 32-2. And I think they started 30-0. And I'd be curious to know, like, at what point did the switch flip? And did it completely flip where they're like, okay, we're really good and this is fun and this is the best we've ever been to, like, okay, now we have to shift our focus to being to doing to winning it all. And I wonder, I should reach out to her. I wonder if they ever got to the point where they thought we're going to win it all. Because at some point a team has to be able to, and that team that Connie had is just as good and maybe better than the team that Fred has. Let's be clear. They had the best player in the country in Kelsey Griffin. That was a really, really good team. It was really old and they were really deep. They played like 11 players. So like we do actually have a comparison piece. It's just the Nebraska women's basketball team that did this something similar about 15 years ago. And there does come a point in the course of your season, and Fred understands this because he coached teams at Iowa State that were not designed to win their first game in the NCAA tournament because Fred's had done that as a player, and they did that well before that. But like Fred's mindset had to have been back then on, how do we get this team prepared to make a run? So simultaneous to making history, the coach has to be thinking about making a run. Simultaneously, he has to tell the media that they're one game at a time. But all these things are like, there is something to how you make a run. You can't just be like, we're living in the moment. We're living in the moment. We're living in the moment. Oh, it's the NCAA tournament. Well, we're living in the moment. Oh, we made history. Oh, what do we do now? Like,
Right.
there's a little bit of an art to it, I think. And I this will make a good transition to the Nebraska football schedule, because one of the things that Nebraska football talked about openly, Matt Rhule, at toward the end of the 2026 season is, how do we get better in November? Nebraska is 2-10 under Matt Rhule in November. And then the schedule came out yesterday. And I'm looking at that schedule and I'm thinking, well, they might be 3-13 after
Right.
next November. At Illinois, I'm sorry, is it at Rutgers or is it at Illinois first? At
At
Illinois,
Illinois.
at Rutgers, Ohio State, at Iowa. Man, like they didn't get any favors. They got favors on the front end, and we'll get to that in a second, but like they didn't get any favors on the back end. Like it was like, we know you struggle in November. Here's three road games, probably at three cold, unfriendly environments. And we're going to throw in a cross country trip to Rutgers, where you fly into I don't know, maybe they fly into New Brunswick or Piscataway. I don't really know. But we'll have to ask them. I think they fly into Newark, I would assume. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm not sure.
But that's a long ass trip. And that is the week before Ohio State. Yay. And then you get a short, then you play Ohio State, then you get a short week and go to Iowa.
So
Probably
okay,
play
so
11.
let's break it down the order here. So it goes at Michigan State, that's the Big Ten opener, September 26th, Maryland, Indiana, at Oregon, then you got your bye to recuperate. Home
Goodbye.
for Washington on Halloween. That could be an electric night game potentially. November 7th at Illinois, at Rutgers, Ohio State at home, and then you turn around on a short week after whatever happens that night or day, and you go to Iowa. Let's rank those, Sam. We did this last year. I haven't gone back and actually looked at how accurate that played out. I feel like it was fairly accurate. I think we probably both overweighted the Penn State game, given how things went. But if
Well,
you were to rank
worst
it,
game they played, though.
it was.
We were right, actually.
It turned out that way, kind
They
of in a
got
roundabout way.
pummeled.
Let's start at the bottom though. Give me like your bottom three, and I'll give you, and we'll work our way up. What do you think is the easiest, second easiest, so on?
The easiest, this is going to sound weird, at Rutgers, Maryland, and at Rutgers is my easiest.
Oh, okay. All
Yeah.
right.
Late in the season, Rutgers doesn't have defense. They don't even play it. They don't play defense because their whole team is beaten up. They barely they can barely stop the run by the end of the season.
Yeah, they're pretty worn down.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like I'm going to go Maryland, October 3rd in Lincoln. I don't know. They don't, unless they're playing Wisconsin, they don't tend to do well on the road. They'll probably be, I haven't looked back at their non-con, but I imagine they'll probably be undefeated or have a good record. I just don't see them coming in and handling it very well. It's going to be Maryland is the easiest. What's your next easiest?
Maryland.
Okay.
So let me just rattle off what Rutgers allowed in their last four games this year in November. 445, 403, 430, and 509. They actually beat Maryland 35-20 in that. But like here are the rushing yards they allowed in the last four. 210, 305, 254, and 300.
Does that sound like something Nebraska is going to be able to do?
Yeah.
To take advantage
Against
of?
Rutgers? Yeah. They'll be.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, Maryland had 305 yards. Hey, Maryland. Yes.
All right.
Yes. Maryland's schedule is Hampton at UConn versus Virginia Tech versus UCLA at Nebraska. We'll have a pretty good idea of what Maryland's all about by the time they come to Nebraska. They'll play three teams that can beat them. I mean, UConn can beat them. UConn went, I don't know, 10-3 or something this year. And then Va-Tech with James Franklin playing Maryland, who James Franklin does not like because they didn't hire him. And then UCLA, I don't know what UCLA is going to be. Nobody knows. No one knows what UCLA is going to be. They're a mystery team. So it's a whole different roster. Maryland, what's your second easiest?
The Michigan State game, as weird as that is, I don't, I think early, you get them early on in the Pat Fitzgerald era. I think that's a good time to take them on. They're going to play, they have a pretty, who do they play in the non-con? Is it Notre Dame? They play somebody, or no? Yeah,
Yeah, they
I'd have to
do.
look again.
They
Notre
play
Dame,
Notre
right?
Dame the week before they play Nebraska.
Yeah, I mean that. I think that absolutely plays in Nebraska's favor. And yeah, the Huskers haven't had a great success at East Lansing, through the years. They probably should have a couple more wins there than they do in the Big Ten, but I think that's an ideal time to play that team. They might figure themselves out and adapt kind of that tough-minded Pat Fitzgerald edge a little bit later. But I think you get them in late September, them coming off a big game, Nebraska kind of coasting through a fairly easy non-con home stretch. I think that's probably a pretty good situation.
Yeah, Ohio won't be easy, but I get you. I feel you.
It's not Indiana's non-con, but it's not what Nebraska's navigated in the past either. This should have been Tennessee here.
I know.
As fun as that
I
would have been.
know.
As
All
fun
right,
as
the
that would
next
have been.
easiest one is at Michigan State for the
Yeah.
reasons you just rattled off. Although Nebraska has not won at Michigan State since 2012.
Right. And even then, just barely.
And even then, just barely. They've won, I think, one game at Michigan State. So, not an easy place for them to play. And Indiana's non-conference schedule, incidentally, is, let's see here, North Texas, Howard, and Western Kentucky. North Texas was pretty good last year, but I think Indiana will beat them. At Michigan State, that would be my next easiest. I assume at Rutgers is your ranking.
Yep, that's my zone. Yep. I feel like those three are kind of in a tier on of themselves of their own. And then to me, it's for six, the next step up, I'm going at Illinois. And there are a few, I guess I choose that one over the Washington home game. In part because the Huskies have a bye week before coming to Nebraska. Illinois, a team last year that kind of faded a little bit at that part of the year once you got into late October, early November. It's not a team that you really want to play. Just they're a tough team. Like physically, they're just going to kind of grind on you. But I kind of put them somewhat in the same camp as you did with Rutgers, where they do tend to maybe wear down. At that point, Nebraska's had some success there as well. It's not an overly formidable venue. So I'm going Illinois at six.
I'll take Washington, the home game on Halloween. I think that's probably the direction I'll go in. Nebraska has had some success in Illinois, obviously won there in 23, won there in 19 in a real ugly game, but they won, high scoring game, a lot of mistakes. Won there in 17. So they won in 17, 19, and 23. They lost there in 21. And 15, the 15 game being, unforgettable in many ways. I don't know. I think it will, I that will not be, so I'm going to go with Washington. I think Washington's going to be a good football team, but I think that's going to be Nebraska's opportunity to break their streak against ranked teams. And it'll be on Halloween, and Nebraska will have a juiced crowd. And you know what? I think they will have a good plan for Washington, and Washington is my six.
Okay. Is Illinois your fifth then?
No.
No. Okay. All right. All right. Washington is my fifth for the reasons that you laid out. All
Okay.
right, give me your fifth then.
Washington is your fifth. I'm making sure I'm keeping notes
Yep.
of this. I don't know. Like, this will sound whatever. At Iowa, Nebraska plays well at Iowa. I don't exactly know why, but they do. They've been very competitive in those games, and they probably should have won a couple of them. And they did win in 22. For whatever reason, Nebraska bodies up against Iowa better in Iowa City than it does in Memorial Stadium. That's a problem that I think they've got to fix. Didn't feel like Nebraska was up for the second half challenge against Iowa this year. I thought it was going to end this year, but I think at Iowa, I think Nebraska will play well in that game, and they'll give it a good shot. And they have a lot of motivation at this point. Again, the desire to beat Iowa is super, super high. It's not like it's Iowa. No, it's not that at all. They're going to want to beat Iowa, and I think eventually they're going to do it. So at Iowa for me.
See, I have Iowa at four for a lot of those reasons. The thing about Iowa to me, Sam, is like I've always been curious, hypothetically, like if those two teams played in late September or late October every year. I feel like if that were the case, Nebraska's record against Iowa would be considerably better,
Okay.
potentially, just because it's warmer. Nebraska's tended to have better skill players at times. And by the time you get into the late season, everybody's worn down, and it really does come down to like toughness and fundamentals. And so Iowa gets stronger as the year goes on. You obviously mentioned Nebraska's record in November, which has been poor well before Matt Rhule came to Lincoln. So that's been something they struggled with for a long time. So I put that a little bit higher at four just because of where it is, the trends. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be close, right? It's close every year. It's probably going to be close again. I'm putting that at number four.
Okay. My number four is at Illinois.
Okay.
I think Illinois is going to be a challenging game, and I think it's going to come a week after the big Washington game. We'll have to see. I think Illinois is going to be decent. I don't know if they're going to be great. I think it'll be 7-5, 8-4, kind of like Nebraska. And if that stadium is relatively full, it's a weird place to play. It's dark. It's sort of dank. Like the lighting isn't great, and the band is loud. Bands in an end zone. It's not pleasant. I've had to do post game videos in that end zone, and it's kind of hard. So, I don't know. I just think that's my number four.
Here we go. Top
Then we get to the
three.
top three.
Top three, all CFP teams last year. My number three is Indiana.
Okay.
And I think that has a lot to do with what they lose from this team. Fernando Mendoza's not walking through that door. They're losing the bulk of the James Madison transfers that have been the heart and the soul of that team for a while. And I mean, it'll certainly be difficult still. Kurt Cignetti is going to have that probably as a top 10 team at that point, especially given the schedule that they've had until then. I just think the other opponents are a little more established in personnel and tradition, and the fact that it's at Nebraska, that place is going to be pumped up. First defending national champion to visit Memorial Stadium since Texas in 2006. Fun fact. So it'd be kind of a fun game. People are going to be excited for that. Indiana's my number three.
First one since 2006. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's a good little fact there.
Well, fun fact.
Mine is Indiana as well. I think they're going to be a great team. I think playing earlier in the season is a little bit better than playing later in the season for Nebraska. I think Nebraska will be a little bit fresher. Indiana's schedule prior to is pretty palatable as well. But you know what? Yeah, I think Nebraska will take a shot, play their best football, do their best they can, and maybe have some answers for Indiana's defense. I think one of the things Nebraska really struggled with when they went out to Bloomington 2 years ago is their offense just really couldn't get on track. And then that offense for Indiana starts rolling downhill and it just gets out of hand. But Dylan didn't have a lot of answers out there. They didn't have a lot of answers for him. And things just kind of got out of hand in the offense. Anyway, I think Dylan threw four interceptions that day. Offense just wasn't prepared for what Indiana was doing defensively. So maybe Nebraska's got some more answers now. They're going to have a senior quarterback instead of a true freshman quarterback. He's a mobile guy. It's going to stress Indiana a little bit in ways that maybe some of the teams that even Indiana played in the playoffs could not. Indiana really did not face many mobile quarterbacks all year long. They just didn't face him. Julian Sand, not mobile, as it turns out. Dante Moore could be, but he isn't really. He needs to kind of actually get a little bit more mobile than he is. Ty Simpson, not mobile. Guy at Miami, not mobile. So, Indiana was able to tee off on a lot of these guys. And a guy like Calandria, maybe he buys a play or two. Of course, they faced Luke Altmyer, and he's mobile, and Illinois was smashed. So, guess you
Right.
never know. What's your number two?
Number two is Ohio State in Lincoln, late November. It's a home game, and Nebraska has not tended to play Ohio State very well at home, oddly. Through the years, it feels like they've done better at the Horseshoe in 2018, and then a couple of years ago as well. But they're going to be loaded. They've got defined personnel all over the place. Their offense is going to be explosive. That D line always ferocious. I just think that's the home playing at home is a little bit more favorable than what they're going to have at Oregon. And again, they at times I think they've been able to shorten the game a little bit with Ohio State. Not that they're necessarily going to be able to do that this time around, but I think if you can trade punches a little bit early, the crowd can get in it, and maybe the conditions will level the playing field a little bit if Ohio State's more of a high flying sort of attack. Very difficult game statement opportunity. I'm putting Ohio State at number two.
Maybe Ohio State's looking ahead to Michigan 6 days, 8 days, 7 days.
Maybe.
I went six, I went eight, I went seven. Yep. And then my number two is Ohio State. My number one is at Oregon. Tough place to play. Oregon doesn't lose there very much. And it comes the week after Indiana. So you're gonna be a little physically beat up. Oregon's gonna be ready for you. It's going to be a challenge to win out there, I think. Much like we said with Penn State last year. And the reality is we were right about the Penn State game. We weren't right about how good Penn State was overarching for the schedule, but Penn State, when Nebraska got in that stadium, Nebraska really didn't match up to what Penn State had to offer after the opening drive. Penn State physically won, dominated. Receivers are just sort of galloping wide open. Nebraska was reduced to looking like a group of five team at Penn State. I thought it was pretty bad. Oregon can do the same thing. Nebraska has to find a way to compete, and they have to run the football, and they have to stick with the run, and they got to stop the run. And Oregon's going to try to jam it down their throat. And Oregon will be on its third offensive coordinator in what? Gosh, 4 years. So they're going to have to kind of reinvent the wheel a little bit. Dan Lanning's not an offensive coordinator, so like he doesn't, it's not his offense. And so it's not like he's overseeing it. So, they just kind of pass it down from the guy that's at Arizona State, Dillingham, to Stein, to candidly, I don't even know who their offensive coordinator is. So I don't know who their new coordinator is. It matters, and he'll have to have a good season, but got to find a way to slow him down. And they love big plays, especially at home. So that's the toughest one for sure. The opportunity to start fast is crucial. One of these years, I say to myself, Evan, Nebraska is going to bow up and they're going to win some games that they're not supposed to win. I just don't know when that is. This would be a great year to do it. This would be a great year because you're going to have four or five games that people don't think you're going to win. And what better time than now to go win one of those? Go beat Indiana. Go beat Ohio State. Go win at Iowa. Go do something you're not supposed to do, and see what positive effect it can have.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the runway's there certainly for 5-0. You could be 5-0 when Indiana comes to town. And honestly, the sequencing of the schedule is similar to what Nebraska's had under Matt Rhule, where you have the non-con is maybe slightly softer than what it's been with they're not facing Colorado and the like, but it does seem like there's again sort of this opportunity for Nebraska to be 5-0. And then you run into just the meat grinder of the Big Ten. And I think from like part of the reason that the schedule came out a little bit later, don't you think, is I think TV executives looked at SEC television rankings compared to Big Ten television rankings. And they said, how do you maximize this? I feel like Nebraska's schedule sort of reflects that, where maybe that Michigan State game, maybe that's a Friday night game. That's a possibility. Find out in May if that turns out that way. But if you're saying 5-0 Nebraska against unbeaten Indiana, that's going to draw eyeballs. Nebraska at Oregon, that's going to draw eyeballs. And then you kind of settle into that second tier of games after that, like Washington and Nebraska are sort of in similar spots. Ohio State in late November is going to do great numbers as usual. And then you've got Iowa on the Black Friday slot. Like, I think it sets up to me to where a lot of people are going to be watching Nebraska, and we'll see if they can turn the storyline in a different way, because it really has been the same. The first half of the season sort of inspires some hope, and the second half brings a cold, hard reality. And I think that sort of template's set up again this year.
Indeed. Indeed. Like I think it feels like a quiet moment in the Husker football program. I think we're going to talk to Matt Rhule next week around signing day-ish, just kind of an off-season review. Maybe we'll talk to Pat Stewart. So I think those things are still coming down the pike, but there's so many things for this program to get right in the off-season, and then you have to go deploy it against a really tough schedule. And yeah, the non-conference schedule is pretty palatable, but like everything else after that is really hard, and it's just going to be day by day, week by week, and then you've got to have the answers once you get in the football games. And I'll be candid with you, Evan, I'm not sure that I felt like Nebraska had any answers schematically or like adjustment wise. I don't know that I felt like Nebraska had a ton of answers after the UCLA game. And they had some answers in that game because they were playing a new quarterback and UCLA wasn't sure what they were going to do. So I don't even know if that one's the one I'd count. Like I just didn't feel like Nebraska had a lot of answers offensively or defensively in a unique way after UCLA or maybe even Northwestern. Like it just they've got to coach it up a little bit down the stretch. And maybe that's one of the things that Rhule's going to talk about with his team and his coaches and his staff, especially as it goes into November. How do you do that the best? How do you tee that thing up? There won't be a distraction of a contract next year, which I think is good.
Hey,
That's good that there's not going to be that distraction.
last thing before we get out, we're not doing season predictions, but give me like your range. Like when you see this schedule now laid out as it is, what's kind of the floor and the ceiling as you see it at this point? Again, lots can change. It's all theoretical. What's kind of your range for this team in 2026?
Think the floor is probably 6-6, 5-7. Although that means you're losing to Michigan State, Maryland, or Rutgers. So I'd say the floor is 6-6, and I think the ceiling with this schedule, I think 10-2, and I think you can get in the playoff at 10-2 with this schedule. Because that means you're beating some teams. So I wouldn't go much beyond that. I think that would be premature. And honestly, I would say, 8-4, 9-3. That'd be my
Yeah,
favorite.
I look at 8-4 as the ceiling, honestly. I mean, it's a bear of a schedule. It does make you kind of think back again at the opportunity Nebraska missed last year, the way that the schedule set up for a better record than what they ended up with. And now, again, this thing's kind of staring you in the face. So I'm with you. 5-7, 6-6. I think 8 wins, you feel pretty good given this schedule. And then we'll see where it goes. But we'll have months to talk about it. It's going to be great. In the meantime, Nebraska basketball continues on. Signing day for football's next week. Baseball and softball, a couple weeks away from getting going as well. So we'll be back next week, I think, to talk about it. And it's going to be a lot of fun. For Sam, I'm Evan. This is the Pick Six Podcast. Thanks for listening.